Hey, this is Scott Galloway, author, professor, entrepreneur, and most importantly, host of the Prop G podcast. We got a special series running on right now called The Future of Work, where I answer all your questions on, surprise, the future of work. Questions including, what are we missing when we work remotely? Or how do we handle work-life balance when a major opportunity comes knocking? From the provocative to the technical, we're offering insights you won't want to miss. So tune in to The Future of Work, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Canva. You can find it on the Prop G Pod wherever you get your podcasts.
Support for this show comes from Sylvan Learning. When children love learning, they can tackle any challenge life throws at them. Sylvan's Insight Assessment can help you determine if your child is ready for what's ahead. It can also identify gaps in learning and point out areas that could be of concern for your child so they can tackle what's to come. And right now, it's the best price of the year at $29. Go to sylvan29.com to learn more and get your child's assessment for only $29. That's sylvan29.com.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
All right. What's going on, everybody? This is not the On to the Next One hosting voice of one Mike Heck. This is, of course, Alexander K. Lee, his co-host. And handling my co-host duties today in place of Mike Heck is the wonderful Jed K. Mishu. Jed, say hi to the world.
Hello. Very excited to be here. We've had a lot of fights that have happened, and now I get to see how Mike lives every Sunday morning when you've been up to the ungodly hours of the evening.
Yes, Mike Heck is a busy man. He is unavailable for the recording of this episode, but he will be back, of course, next week on our regularly scheduled programming. As it is, you got me and Jed. Jed has filled in ably several times in the past, and he was generous enough to grace us with his presence today. Jed, thoughts, just some broad thoughts on an action-packed Saturday. We'll be focusing on, of course, UFC Mexico City matchmaking, but there was a lot more than that. A lot more than that, wasn't there?
I mean, we had the PFL card, so that was... that was something. I was watching fights from noon with a very small intermission until whatever, 1:30. So 12 plus hours of fighting for me personally yesterday is an awful lot. It's not a small amount of fighting, but it was largely good. And, you know, Flyweight Unders took a hit last night, but the Mexico City card was in general, it delivered in action. And you know, not their best card ever, but I think it was an adequate return to Mexico after like 4 years off. So all in all, okay.
Yeah, I don't think any fight fan can complain if they dedicated, you know, 8 or so hours to the two cards. Plus there was KSW Epic and various other regional events. There was just a lot going on if you wanted to scratch that fight itch. So
legitimately, KSW yeah. Epic was the most interesting stuff that happened on Saturday. Like, I mean, it is their promotion, like their actual promotion is top notch. Like the vibes are always great. They were doing some real weird stuff yesterday, if you guys haven't seen it, but they basically went full fight circus, which was like awesome and kind of odd, but there was a boxing match on there that ended up being a little weird. The finish was a hand injury. There was Phil DeFries, the KSW heavyweight champion, just in a grappling match with Josh Barnett. It was a little bit of one championship stuff. They had a one-man tournament, or not a one-man, a four-man one-night tournament. There was a soccer kick fight. There was an MMA in like old-school gi fight. They were doing some fun stuff, and there was a lot of fun to be had that evening.
Yeah, and KSW is so smart about, again, sort of branding different events because, listen, maybe this is their new line of things, right? They have their Epic brand now for when they want to just, someone wants to do boxing. So they want to do a no-holds-barred bout. They want to do a one-night tournament. And also, what do you do with guys like Mehmet Khalidov, who's done everything, but it's not right to retire? And mm-hmm. You can still, frankly, squeeze a few more dollars out of old Mehmet. So throw him in there with a boxer? Sure. Didn't go great this time? That's fine. But hey, listen, you got Puds out there. Puds isn't going to fight MMA forever either. He's definitely got a few boxing matches in him. Why let Puds go box for someone else when you throw him on KSW Epic 3 and, you know, sometime next year, and then you have Puds boxing. Same with Phil DeFries. He's clearly cleared out your heavyweight division. So what do you do? Hey, let's get a former UFC champion, very well-known guy, Josh Barnett. Just have him grapple. Doesn't have to do anything crazy. Don't have to go jump through the hoops to make an MMA fight. Have him grapple. So it would be amazing, of course, if we could see the UFC do the same thing. We talk all the time about, like, oh, Legends Division, and just, like, look, wouldn't it be cool if they let the fighters do this, do that? UFC is doing amazing. They don't have to make any changes, but this is when you're another big promotion, you know, that's not the UFC, that's over in Europe, one of the biggest promotions in Europe. You can play around a little bit, and KSW does that all the time. So high marks for the concept, for sure.
So yeah, it was a great Saturday. I mean, three pretty major, I mean, the two world leaders in MMA put on an event, the three, I guess, if you however you want to feel about Bellator and its existence, and then KSW, which is sort of the darling of certainly hardcore fans. So it was a great Saturday.
Yeah, it's a good time to be a combat sports fan, man. I know in the media, people think we in the media complain all the time about, I don't know. Well, listen, we complain about various things, but should be complained about fighter pay, maybe certain fighter behavior. And c'est la vie, I get it. We all get it. That's part of the game, but that doesn't mean that we're not going to, you know, we're just going to sit here and accept less desirable aspects of combat sports. But overall, if you're just a fan and you're looking for a good times, it's just almost never been better. I mean, we can harp on about some of the, you know, the golden age of the Pride era and, you know, the rise of the UFC and how cool it was back then. And that was great. If I go back there, I'd love to. But it ain't bad now. It ain't bad now. We got Francis Ngannou, boxing again in a couple weeks. Anthony Joshua, UFC 299 coming up. It's a good time, man. And I thought UFC
was.
Yeah.
I thought it was a good time. Now we have Shamil Gaziev versus Yarzinho Rosenstrike. Another banger. Back to the bad times.
Another banger. Mexico City certainly delivered in a lot of ways. You know, might start off a bit slow. Some fights forgettable, but as with any UFC card, you take the top half, you slice the top half off. You got yourself a pretty tasty cut there. So, main event. Let's get to the matchmaking, Jed. Main event. Brandon Royval gets a measure of revenge against Brandon Moreno. Brendan. That's right. He's lost the battle of the Brandons. Maybe not the most dominant performance, but it certainly was a raw dog-esque performance, man. He came forward for five rounds and was just throwing. And he was getting cracked a lot, but he was landing plenty enough to get two 48-47 scores. What do you think of Royval's performance, Jed? And what is next for the raw dog?
I've seen a number of people poo-pooing Brandon Royval's performance.
Really?
I mean, just because it was ugly. Like it's an ugly fight. There have been comparisons made to some of the fighters who historically maybe your views vary on, but some Frankie Edgar during the worst parts of his career where he was winning fights on activity rather than actually being effective.
I've never heard of this before. Any comparison to Frankie Edgar is a good one. So that counts as a compliment to me.
So largely comparisons to Frankie Edgar are good, but certainly during parts of his run, he was just moving his hands a lot and not being the most actually effective boxer. Leonard Garcia, WEC standout, and we got a somewhat Leonard Garcia-esque performance from Royval. I mean, he threw 500 punches, AK, yeah, and that's the second most strike attempts behind Max Holloway. I saw somebody with that stat out there. He landed like 200 of them, less than 200 maybe. He landed at like a 28% clip. On the one hand, you got to praise the activity. On the other hand, when you are spamming that much volume and being that ineffective with it, I think it's fair to at least critique that. But on the other side of it, Brandon Moreno let him do it and let him get beat that way. So what's that say about Brandon Moreno? For Royval, this was not – my biggest issue is that this was not the performance that made me think title fight. Like, right? Like, he is coming off a dominant loss to Pantoja. He tried his best on the mic afterwards to kind of set that up, saying, all these dudes just want to hold me. They want to take me down. I'm never going to get held down again. And to his credit, that was by far the most dynamic part of his game on Saturday, when Moreno was trying to grab a hold of him, get him to the mat, he was hell on wheels, man. Like, he was constantly moving, throwing up submission attempts from his back. Almost got a go-go plata. I say almost, but I mean, like, he was three-fourths of the way to a go-go plata that Brandon Moreno then had to just be like, bail, bail, bail on. Like, that was the most dynamic part of his game. But he won this fight with his striking. And so, you know, it wasn't pretty, even if it was effective, I guess.
Yeah. And listen, to me, that's, again, everything you said there was a stirring endorsement. The Frankie Edgar comparison, the Leonard Garcia comparison, the amount of strikes thrown. You don't want to get into like Michael Bisping territory where it's like, oh, he's the middleweight leader in significance. I don't know if Bisping is anymore, but he's certainly up there. And it's like,
Sean Strickland's already got him.
Might have, yeah. Before he became champion, that was kind of a critique of Bisping. So I was like, okay, yeah, he's landing a lot of punches because he can't knock anybody out. We certainly wouldn't say that about Orival. It wasn't even that fair of a criticism of Bisping. You know, he sprinkled in a TKO here and there. And Orival has plenty of finishes. And not being able to finish Brandon Moreno, there's no shame in that. I think no one has, right, except for Pantoja on The Ultimate Fighter. Am I crazy?
I can check that something? For you, yeah, but I don't think so.
I've got my clicking fingers here. You guys can hear that. Yeah. So he got finished in The Ultimate Fighter, which counts, sort of. But on his pro record, all eight losses from Moreno by decision. And
eight losses is a lot of losses.
It's a lot. But several were kind of early in his career. Got into one of those weird, okay. So anyway.
Also, recently.
I'm happy with a saw from Roy Val, and I do think it was enough to earn him a rematch, only because we all know what the deal is with UFC 301 in Rio. They definitely need a Brazilian to headline the show. In their infinite wisdom, they have already booked Alex Pereira. They have already booked Charles Oliveira very close to this show. And so it seems like Pantoja is the next man up, and he needs someone. And while there are names and while there is business to be settled next week, I can't look that far ahead just yet. So I have to have something from Royval. I think he's done enough to get the shot. He's reliable. He's available. And I was not satisfied with their fight in December. I want Royval to get one more shot and bring his usual style and see what happens. Pantoja's already beaten him twice, so could be the same. But we're filling the headliner here. This is the new UFC schedule. Give me Pantoja, Royval, Trezo.
Didn't do it, can't do it. I'm not saying it won't happen. Yep. I actually don't think it will happen, but there is certainly a world because the most important thing is availability. Royval will be available. I don't think they're going to headline that card. I just don't think the UFC would do 301 with Alejandro Pantoja. Is as good of a fighter as he is. I think I have him like top three or four pound for pound in the world. They're not going to headline the pay-per-view follow-up to 300 with flyweights. I just don't think that's going to happen. They'll scramble something else out there. Maybe Tom Aspinall versus Jailton Almeida, if Almeida can make a quick turnaround and get past Curtis Blaydes. But like Pantoja is for sure fighting there, so there's a world where Royval gets it. But you said it. They fought in December. That fight was not competitive. That fight was not interesting. Maybe it wasn't Royval's best day in the office, but as a bad time to have a bad day in the office, you know, and I can't have one very competitive, contentious split decision win over Brandon Moreno, who himself has lost now three or four or something. He's lost like a pretty fair amount in the last bit and should be like, yeah, let's run this back 6 months later. If they do, it won't be the worst thing, but I think we are going to get Muhammad Makhachev in there because I think Makhachev is going to beat Alex Perez next weekend. And even though it might be a little green, a little early for him, flyweight's in a weird spot right now because Amir Albazi hurt himself and Menho Kaip should have been the inside track here, but he blew weight. So I really struggle with what to do with Royval and Moreno, honestly, for that matter. Yeah. I settled on Menho Kaip. Because I think he's going to have to fight one more time, more likely than not. He's already honestly fought like a lot of the top flyweights out there. Like we're already there, and we're just doing a lot of rematches at the top of flyweight. I mean,
yep.
Pantoja during this fight held up a 5-0 with his hands, which was hilarious to me because he has collectively beaten the two Brandons 5-0. He's faced them 5 times collectively and won every single one. And ostensibly, they may have been fighting for a title shot. Like, I want to get something new in there. I'm going to give Mel Kopp another opportunity to make weight, do the thing. And then if Royval goes out there and beats Mel Kopp, I got no issues running it back. That's 2 good wins over top 5, top 7 dudes. And if Mel Kopp can make weight and get the win, he's bona fide. There's nothing keeping him from the title fight. So that's where I went. That's what I'm hoping is happening. And maybe even will happen, honestly.
Yeah, Kopp-Royval is a great matchup. I would hate to see it at the Apex. I hope they can find a way to get that in front of people because that's just a super banger of a fight.
It's for sure an Apex headliner, though.
Oh, God. That needs people. That needs people. It's weird how the Albazi having to bow out of the Moreno fight kind of screwed things up as far as what you're saying. Like, we almost were close to creating fresh challengers because if Albazi had won, which I'm not sure he would have. I think I still would have picked Moreno. But if Albazi had won, there's a fresh challenger. If Makhachev dominates next week, there's a fresh challenger. And suddenly we break this like rematch cycle. But because and if Kopp had not had the weight box last time, he's probably, like I said, in the mix, the front runner to get a title shot. If he'd won his fight,
he's winning. He is getting the next title fight. There was a 2-hour window or whatever where Albazi was pulled out, and we're just like, oh my goodness. Now Mel Kopp is no doubt about it fighting for a title shot right here. And a day and a half later, he misses weight. And we're like, never mind.
Yeah. So Kopp, Albazi, and Makhachev, they're right there to like get the title. They're right there. It's just circumstance. The cards have not fallen as they could have. And again, that's where we've gotten the rematches and trilogies. And we're talking about the Ultimate Fighter. And anyway. So for Moreno, I think they could just rebook Albazi, Jed. I wasn't sure if you mentioned what you had for Moreno as well.
I had not.
We'll just touch upon this quickly.
Yeah. I think they are going to rebook Albazi. It's not what I want. It's not what I chose. Moreno's lost a lot lately, man. And that's, I think, my issue with the rebooking Albazi fight is Moreno has lost, 2 in a row. And with the Figgy fight, he's lost 3 of 4. He's got
split calls.
Yes, but I do like to live in a world where losing matters. And Moreno going from losing to Brandon Royval, dropping down to like 4 or something in the UFC rankings to fighting another dude immediately next to him means that, he goes and wins and then he beats Amir Albazi. And then if he beats Amir Albazi, what are we doing? I want him to have to defend his position against someone a little further back. I want somebody a little further back to get an opportunity. If I didn't think Makhachev was about to get a title fight by beating Alex Perez, I would have said that. But in this scenario where all of this has played out, Machinel and Steve Ursag are fighting. It is not a fight that people are pumped about by any means. But if Ursag goes out there and wins, which I think he is going to do, he's undefeated in the UFC flyweight division. He came in and immediately beat a top dude. Sort of here, and I don't have any idea really what his ceiling is, but I think if he goes out there and beats Machinel, which I think is going to happen, I am projecting all that, and I'm saying, let's make Brandon Moreno defend a little further back. Let's get somebody else an opportunity, and let's get Steve Ursag that shot.
Damn, was not expecting a Steve Ursag mention this morning.
I knew that this one would not be a Friends Forever. I was deeply confident.
Yeah, and I'm not against it. He was, I think, one of our rookie. I don't know if he finished top 5 in our Rookie of the Year voting, but he was on some ballots. Steve Ursag was on some ballots. He snuck in there. He surprised some people. His only disappointment last year really was that he couldn't get his Wi-Fi working during his MMA hour debut. But hey, it could be a big year from 2024. If he gets the Moreno fight, he'll probably get another shot at talking to Ariel again. So I like that. That's a little out of the box. Again, I went with pretty basic, the rebooking, but Ursig Moreno in 2024?
Dude, I mean, he's 28 years old. He beat David Dvorak.
Yeah.
Coming in, beats Alessandro Costa. If he beats Matt Schnell, who is, let me pull up where the UFC has Matt Schnell. Matt Schnell's number 9. So beats Matt Schnell, he's going to move into 8 or 9. And with all the other shenanigans going on, with Amir Albazi still being hurt, it was a neck injury. I have no idea what the timeline for Albazi to come back is. It's hopefully not bad, but let's get some new guys opportunities, baby.
I wonder if Moreno takes like a one-off at 135 just to stay busy and freshen things up. But then I just had this horrible thought of him somehow. Him fighting Figgy again. He's going to end up fighting
Figgy again. No, we're dumb. I want to change my answer.
Oh, go. Who is he fighting?
It's obviously Henry Cejudo.
Oh, God.
There's the beef there. Cejudo came out this. I didn't even think of this until you said it.
I'm hitting my buzzer. We don't talk about Cejudo on this show.
No, but the idea of a one-off fight makes a ton of sense for him. There's the beef there with Henry Cejudo sort of built in. Yep. Cejudo came out this week and said he's not retiring, that he's a liar, and that he can't go out like that. Cejudo, you could put Cejudo against any bantamweight and that would be fine, but I'm shifting my answer. I would prefer the Steve Ersig because, you know, meritocracy. That actually probably is going to happen.
Ugh.
I think that you spiked it. We found it, AK.
Oh, that I want
That's
no
my
part of this.
I was selection.
You're locking it in?
Locking it in. I want the point when it happens.
God. I really enjoyed the Ersig mention more than Cejudo, by the way. We were having a good time. And you went totally the other direction. I shouldn't have mentioned Bantam.
I mean, I think the Ersig would make more sense, but I got some concerns about whether Brandon Moreno might be on the downside of his career. I think we obviously know Henry Cejudo is. Moreno's still a young man, but got a lot of miles on him, a lot of 25-minute fights at this point, and that sort of adds up. It was a very bad performance. Like, just straight up, it was one of the worst performances technically from Brandon Moreno in some time. Mm. So I think that fight makes all the sense in the world. It's my official pick now, AK.
Gross. I saw some people saying I think Cejudo should come down to 125 at some point and for his, you know, to save his whatever what's left of his UFC career. And I'm like, don't make poor 37-year-old Henry Cejudo cut down to 125 anymore. I'm sure he could do it. Just don't make him do it. It can't be a good time.
I'm not confident he can anymore.
I mean, he could do it. I just don't know how he'd function on fight night. Let's go to the co-main here. Brian Ortega, man, proving me wrong, making me look like a dummy as I always am with his rematches. I picked him in the first fight, loses to kind of a freak injury. Sorry, Yair. I know he wants to take credit for that submission /TKO. But, you know, we all know the injury had a huge impact on that result. And comes back and he submits a year after a pretty poor start. But, yeah, comes back in his comeback. Well done, Brian Ortega. I'm going with Giga Chikadze, I think. We talked a lot on the post-fight show about the possibility of him getting that title shot against Ilya. It's actually really high, so I don't want to rehash all that. Guys, you can listen to the post-fight show if you want to see us break that down. We were pretty thorough. But I have previously stated that I want to see Mostar get the title shot. I am not backing away from that. So for me, Topuria is already booked. Hopefully it'll be Mostar. And I'm going with Chikadze for Ortega.
I like to pick, not what I'm going with. I am going with Movsar. I think, listen to the previous show, but Jose Young's kind of laid out sort of my perfect, not my perfect world, but the world that I think is by far the most likely to happen. UFC is not in the Movsar business. They were very down on his Arnold Allen fight, despite it not there not being a reason to. And so I think he pretty clearly is one fight away unless everything falls apart and he steps in there. I certainly think that Movsar versus Topuria in Spain is the least interesting of the Spain, like the possible Spain opponents. I think I never won a media rematch. I think the overwhelming likelihood is Alexander Volkanovski is going to fight Ilya Topuria again later this year because Volk will say yes. And he is not going to take the time off that I think a lot of people are projecting. Oh, we'd like him to take some time off so he, you know, is healthy. I just don't think that's going to happen. So, given that, I think Brian Ortega versus Movsar makes a ton of sense because the winner of that is a no doubt about it, 100% bona fide contender. So I went Movsar of love.
Yeah, if only Movsar had sprinkled in a finish here or there, he would have the favor of Dana. I still think Dana was confused about what fight he was talking about at UFC 297 when he was slamming Movsar and Arnold Allen, or maybe he wasn't watching clearly. That was such a bizarre moment, but it's there though. That quote is hanging out there now, and it's just I don't know how you can sell Movsar after that. But
I think I honestly think that he was not confused. It is this dude has literally never finished anyone in the UFC, and Dana, like if Arnold Allen had won, they probably would have been a little more accepting of it because Arnold does have some finishes. It's generally a more exciting fighter than Movsar Evloev. I don't think there's a human being in the world other than direct relations to Evloev who would call him the most exciting fighter. And so I think Dana is just like, yeah, the dude who keeps John Fitch, just John Fitch again. And I'm not going to give him a title fight until there are no other options, which I think is going to be the case.
I'm waving my magic wand. I'm trying to get Movistar in there. But boy, the more we talk about it and the more I think fans talk about it, I feel like it's just going to move further away from that. So
Movistar is number four on the list of possible contenders for Ilya right now.
That's so true and so silly. And it just angers me. Let's move to some, I don't want to say positive. Well, yeah, positive vibes because I'm happy with my matchup for this guy. We kind of went back and forth, Jed, like, should we do, you know, the losers of the two top fights? And they're big names. They're top five guys in the divisions. And
they were 25-minute fights.
And they're 25-minute fights. It felt like there was serious title implications in both. So, unfortunately, Fajir probably will not be getting that title shot anytime soon. Again, suffers a tough loss to a very gutsy Brian Ortega. Where'd you go with Yair then, Jed? Are we trying to keep him in contention? Did you just find a fun opponent for him? A little bit of both? What's going on with El Pantera?
I went with the fight that I feel honestly pretty confident is going to happen here. Low-hanging fruit, so if you have it, I'm not sure we can friends forever this, but it's on a two-fight losing streak. You know who else on a two-fight losing streak? First of his career, Mr. Arnold Almighty Allen. This is just the way the UFC does business. Two dudes who are top six, I think, in their rankings, both coming off two losses in a row. They're not going to make either guy fight super far back. Their timelines align pretty easily. So, yeah, Yair Rodriguez, Arnold Allen is my choice in a fight that will be fun.
Oh, definitely, definitely. And again, two top 10 guys, another fight that's, oh God, I keep hearing say this, like headlining of Apex. No, you can't fight Yair. You can put anybody in the Apex, can't you, Jed? Pretty much.
I mean, you can, but I do, you know, there's still the Noche thing that's going to happen. I think there's a pretty high likelihood that Yair versus Arnold Allen at Noche.
Yeah, that is a good pick. I have, on a previous show, said I kind of want Dan Ige to get a shot at Arnold Allen. So I've been really pleased with Ige's performance lately. I want to see him get a top six, top seven guy and maybe take that spot. I'm sure Allen would be like a minus 200 favorite. That's fine. So I can't go away from that. So I was left over with one Mr. Edson Barbosa.
Oh, come on. That's not the answer.
Yeah, man, it's a fun fight. And I kind of, in my mind, I was like, I probably have made this before and on to the next one, or fans suggested it. Because I was like, did they fight? Like, is this a two? And I'm like, no, Yair and Edson have never fought each other. And Edson's on a two-fight win streak. Yair's, as you said, streaking the other way. So I think they got to meet in the middle. I think Barbosa deserves his chance at Yair's spot. I would pick Yair. He's minus 250 probably going to that fight. But hey, it's a fun matchup. Barbosa, I think, can beat anyone on the feet on a good day. And there you go. There's another. We're just creating Apex headliners here, Jed. I hope the matchmakers are listening, because this is Apex headlining money.
I will say that fight is deeply fun, so I don't hate it if it happens. Mm. I thought that there were two options here. I thought you were either going to go Arnold Allen, or I thought because to me, the other obvious choice was the winner of Aljamain Sterling, Calvin Kattar, because the winner of that's probably not actually getting a title fight, but it's a big fight. It's meaningful. They're one away. And you go from that to beating former interim champion Yair Rodriguez. Maybe you are in there. So, and come on, Calvin Kattar, Yair Rodriguez, baby. Woo! That's a fight.
Yeah, that the result of that Kattar Sterling fight, it's going to create some interesting,
make things weird again,
possibilities at 145. Yeah, some listeners sent in comments suggesting Sterling for some things. And I'm like, yeah, I'm like, if Sterling wins, he could really insert himself into one of these big featherweight fights. So he's out there. Aljo, a lot on the line there. A lot on the line. UFC 300, a lot on the line.
Hey, this is Scott Galloway, author, professor, entrepreneur, and most importantly, host of the Prop G podcast. We got a special series running on right now called The Future of Work, where I answer all your questions on, surprise, the future of work. Questions including, what are we missing when we work remotely? Or how do we handle work-life balance when a major opportunity comes knocking? From the provocative to the technical, we're offering insights you won't want to miss. So tune in to The Future of Work, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Canva. You can find it on the Prop G Pod wherever you get your podcasts.
Support for this show comes from Sylvan Learning. As a parent, you want your child to have every opportunity, but giving them the tools they need to tackle every challenge, that takes a team. Now more than ever, educational support tailored exactly to what your child needs can make all the difference. That's why parents have trusted Sylvan Learning for 45 years as the ultimate teammate in their child's educational journey, instilling in them a love for learning and a passion for reaching the next level. and Sylvan's Insight Assessment can identify gaps in learning and areas that could be of concern for your child. It's a 360-degree view into your child's learning that you can't find anywhere else, and helps ensure that your child didn't miss something in school that might put them at a disadvantage in the future. And right now, it's the best price of the year at $29. Go to sylvan29.com to learn more and get your child's assessment for only $29. That's sylvan29.com.
Let's run through some of these other, great main card winners, but got people who are probably, again, probably not close to a top 15, top 20 opponent. You might disagree. We'll start with Daniel Zellhuber, young Daniel Zellhuber, being even younger, Francisco Prado. Classy performance, shown a lot of why people are so excited about Zellhuber. This was easy for me. I just picked up another winner from this card, another guy who's kind of similar size-wise. We might have to see Zellhuber, how he does against someone with similar dimensions, similar reach. Let's put him in there with Fresh Zium, who picked up a split decision, which should have been a unanimous decision win over Claudio Poyas. And let's see where the cards fall. I think Zellhuber can win that fight, but if not, it's okay. It's only 24. I can take a loss and go back to the drawing board.
AK, do you hear that sound?
Oh, I hear. I think it's music. Should I tell them to turn it down, or should we just go along with it?
I think we might want to just go along with it.
Okay.
It's a friend. Yeah. Forever.
Perfect timing.
I also chose for his ZM. I considered going Manuel Torres, again, another lightweight winner on this card. Sure. I don't think you're wrong if that's the way you went. I think there's a world, but I don't know why. I just reflexively, I was like, both of those had really impressive, their main card fighters, whereas for ZM was on the prelims, even though I kind of put all of these dudes sort of in that same range of top 40, top 35-ish lightweights. I was like, I don't want Manuel Torres and Zellhuber to fight just yet. We don't need any Mexican on Mexican violence. First ZM goes into Mexico, gets himself a win. And now against the Prince of Peru. Now we got to see if he can beat the soon to be Prince of Mexico in Daniel Zellhuber. So fully with you.
Yeah, I definitely want to avoid the Zellhuber Torres matchup for now. I think after Saturday, I kind of have them right next to each other in my rankings. They're clogged up because I have Trey Ogden in there above Zellhuber. He did beat Zellhuber in the what was his UFC debut. And at this point, I mean, you could probably put Zellhuber well above Ogden. He's fought three times since then. He's won all three fights. Ogden lost his last fight, but I need to see Zellhuber beat someone ranked higher than him, and which he hasn't done yet. So if you have Zellhuber in your top like 35, I understand. I just, him and Torres, I think just right below Ogden. Ogden's holding on to that spot with his 1-2 UFC record. Rankings are dumb. Rankings are dumb. Okay. We do them all the
sometimes,
time. You
know? Sometimes they're silly.
Rankings are dumb. Jasmine Haraghi. Great bounce back performance. Listen, she just got trucked by Denise Gomez last time. It happens. I think Denise Gomez is going to do that to a few people in her career. She's going to lose some obvious decisions, and then she's going to have like 35-second, 40-second knockouts. So no shame for Haraghi for that happening. They gave her the right matchup in Sam Hughes. She kept the fight on the feet where it needed to be and just kind of picked Sam Hughes apart. So way to go. What do you think for Haraghi? What do you think of her prospects as a future contender? And who do you have for her next?
At the risk of being a bit dismissive, I don't think she has a ton of prospects as like a true contender. But she's very young, has enough skills out there, can continue to develop. In a weight class that is quietly getting pretty weak, we aren't talking about it much, but strawweight is... I mean, just look at strawweight. Like, you look certainly at the top of the ranking. Strawweight is looking like... light heavyweight, welterweight, got a lot of old heads hanging around here. Who's the young butts to come in? Lupi Godinez is coming in. But other than that, I mean, Angela Hill's still holding on to a ranking. Kaylina Kovalkovich is holding on to it. Michelle Waterson Gomez is holding on to a ranking. We got a lot of older bodies just floating around there with not a ton of incoming talent. So maybe Yargui can sort of ride that. But I do think she's probably going to kind of flirt with the rankings, hang around maybe at the bottom end for a long period of time, just because she's got enough going for her. I was going for timeline on this one. Corey McKenna is fighting Jacqueline Amorim coming up. Oh. Amorim is, 7-1 and kind of exciting. Corey McKenna is on a good one win streak right now. The timelines should match up pretty well here. So I'm going for the winner of that fight gets Yargui.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I probably should have gone with someone closer to her. Sorry, I've just lost my train of thought here. I have two options for Hadagi, none of whom I went with. Let me just reset there. I probably should have gone with a higher ranked veteran opponent. Some of the names you mentioned, Jed, Michelle Watterson, Carolina Kovalkiewicz. And I saw listeners suggest that, and I get it. They're going to hate this suggestion because the pick I have for Hadagi is someone else who should be getting one of those veteran names. But I kind of want to see her fight Loma. I know people are a lot higher on Loma. I know putting two sort of up-and-coming strawweights against each other sucks because someone would have to take a loss. I think I'm just being selfish here, and I want to see a fun fight. In reality, one of them should get Carolina probably. One of them should get Michelle Watterson. Or, like you said, Amorim, if Amorim's able to win her next fight, I think would be a good option as well.
I refuse to book Michelle Watterson Gomez. She's lost, like, in a row.
Well,
like,
she's out. She's got to fight somebody. She's not retired. She's not retired.
It's super weird. I don't know what we're doing there.
Hadagi, Watterson Gomez, UFC Apex 98 or whatever, wherever we're heading in, whatever direction we're heading in there numerically. So I like her and Loma. Again, probably doesn't happen. Probably shouldn't happen. I know people don't want to see that one just yet. Like if Hadagi does pan out, that's a fight you want to see further down the road. But again, I'm selfish. I just like to see good fights. That's a great fight. That's how I'm going. And probably being a little selfish here with my pick for the main card opener winner, Manuel Torres, a man who hates second rounds. What was the action on him from No Bets Barred?
Connor might have had something. I did not have any on this fight. I was traveling last week, and so I did not do almost any research to bet Mexico City. So I just didn't have the time. I bet all the flyweight unders, which did not work out, and a couple of other fights, which did and didn't work out, but I did not watch this. But yeah, hates the first round or hates the second round, never wants to go there. And that's why we respect him, you know?
Yeah. We'll get the full moratorium on the event, and also, yes, some of the unfortunate flyweight under bets that might not have hit on No Bets Barred later this week, guys. We'll look out for that. And also, of course, I mean, I don't know why I need to tell people to tune in, Chad. They're there for the, they want the Rozenstruik versus Gaziev card bets. So, it's going to be a loaded episode anyway. Torres is great. I think he's 8-2 now in his last 10, and all 10 of those fights did not go to the second round. I am such a fan. This was such the right choice to open the UFC Mexico City main card, and he delivered, man. I had a first round knockout, but hey, the guy mixes the martial arts, gets the first round submission. Chris Duncan's a tough guy too, so not something to sneeze at. And now Torres is 3-0 in the UFC. Give him another guy. I'm not going up the rankings. I'm actually going back just because I want more first round finishes. Put him in there with Ludovic Klein, and let's have someone get their head knocked off.
Yeah, that's not bad. I didn't even think of that. This was a tougher one just because it's sort of weird on where Torres is. I almost just went back and was like, I'll just do Zell Huber. It's pretty simple. Glad we didn't, because friends forever. Mike Davis is fighting Natan Levy next weekend, pretty in March sometime. And they're just kind of around, their top, again, sort of in that same mix of top 50-ish lightweights as a lot of Ziam and Zell Huber are. And kind of made sense from a fight. Nothing major here, just the way I went.
Yeah, you can't go wrong with either of those guys. A guy like Torres, we're not making any big projections for him yet. A lot of fighters can look great in their first few UFC fights, and then they hit a certain level of competition, and they lose their next three, and we're never talking about them again. So let's enjoy the magic of Manuel Torres. You said Nathan Levy's fighting. Who is Nathan Levy and?
Mike Davis.
Mike Davis. Oh, Mike Davis would be a huge, 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 really whoever wins that, but especially Mike Davis. And man, we just need to see Mike Davis fight more. If Mike Davis picks up that W, let's try and turn around quick, get him in there with Manuel Torres. I just need more Mike Davis in my life, need more Manuel Torres in my life. Maybe some Levy as well. Wild card. I went in a direction that may seem unexpected, but anyone who's listened to me talk about the fighter I chose will know, if anything, it'll be like an obvious pick. But I'm curious, Jed, let's go with your wild card pick first. I'll let people know, for listening to the show first time, you pick anybody with your wild card pick that we haven't already talked about. It can be one of the winners from the prelims. It can be one of the losers from any fight on the card. Again, we've already covered Moreno and Rodriguez in that regard. But yes, this is our chance to pick up any little thread left, any narrative thread we haven't commented on yet, and pick that up and run away with it. So Mike. Jed Meshew, who was your wild card pick this week?
I have an important question for you.
Sure.
Did I have to go with the UFC card? Because I
made a wild card. No, absolutely not.
I did make a wild card for the UFC in case we were trying to keep this really structured in there. But again, some awesome fights happened in PFL, and I went through and was like, AJ McKee, be pretty fun to see him fight like Usman Nurmagomedov. I'm pretty into that. Pitbull versus Aaron Pico, be pretty into that. What I settled on, I thought that the best way to just bring it all together, right? And for the record, my UFC wild card would have been Francisco Prado versus John McDessie, because I think Francisco Prado is just going to be John McDessie. He's going to have a really fun career, a little bit undersized in the weight class, hang around forever. It's going to be great. Just do it. It would be a banger of people chucking things at each other. But the one I went for, I got a twofer. I doubled up AK on extracurriculars. I want Vadim Nemkov to fight Francis Ngannou, but that's not happening. We know that that's not happening. Just seems very unlikely. But I do want Vadim Nemkov to get to fight good heavyweights. And I got to tell you, beating Bruno Capoloza was impressive. You know, fighting Hinam Fahita or Anzi D'Elia or Denis Galtsov or whoever, I don't care. Like, I'll watch it, but I don't. Linton Vassell, not that interesting. What I want to see is that entire PFL Bellator card. If you haven't watched it, take my word for it. If you are and you're listening, you can vouch. They open the evening by being like, hey, this is the first time in the history of MMA that two organizations have champions fighting champions. It never happens. They're forgetting all about the Bellator versus Ryzen stuff. No. And they hammered that point home. Randy Couture is sitting there doing his commentary thing, and they're like, Randy's like, yeah, you know, it doesn't ever happen. If it had, I would have gotten to fight Fedor. Never mind that Randy would have gotten his ass handed to him by Fedor. You know, it's unfair that this doesn't happen. They hammered on it. They hammered on it with John Jones coming in and then putting him on blast for the UFC not booking Jones and Ngannou in the PFL banner or whatever. So if you're going to live life like that, you better stand on business and back it up. Give me Vadim Nemkov, Bellator, some sort of champion, versus KSW heavyweight champion Phil DeFreeze. If you're going to talk that greasiness, you better back it up with a champ versus champ fight that isn't explicitly in your own interest, but is in the interest of the fans. Phil DeFreeze is having to grapple Josh Barnett because there's nobody else for him to fight in KSW. Him versus Vadim Nemkov, that's my wild card pick.
Wow. It's too early to do KSW Epic 2, because there's your KSW Epic 2 headliner, right? Like we said, let's use this Epic brand to do some wonky outside-the-box stuff. And certainly KSW versus, well, I guess Bellator / PFL.
Versus PFLator?
Versus PFLator would fit outside of the box. Put your money where your mouth is. I love it. And frankly, for anyone who's asking why would PFL do that, KSW is bigger than PFL. I don't know if maybe not after the Bellator acquisition. Okay, maybe I'm being unfair. The Bellator acquisition maybe puts PFL it's more over the top. But individually, if we're looking thinking on a global level, KSW was probably bigger than either Bellator or PFL. Is that a crazy thing to say? No,
it's not a crazy thing at all, because right. So a couple of critical things here. KSW is not as big of a promotion writ large. They don't have the same number of high-level fighters as PFL Tour does or whatever. Fair. Sure. But let me tell you what KSW does. They sell out stadiums regularly. They have a consistent, successful business model that has continued to operate successfully for years on end. And moreover, they have an identity that people love. Like, there are actual people out there, hardcore MMA fans, love and respect KSW as the spiritual successor to Pride. There just aren't a lot of PFL fans out there. And we talked about it on the post show. Watch KSW Epic. watch PFL versus Bellator. One of those crowds is live. One of those crowds feels like a crowd in an event, and one of them is happening in Riyadh. And, you know, is basically an Apex card at points in time. So, but mostly, if you're gonna throw shade at the UFC for not co-promoting against their own interests, buddy, you better be ready to step up and put your money where your mouth is for a fight that is legitimately fun and more compelling than any other fight you have on offer for Vadim Nemkov at this point in time.
Man, I should have gone first with the wild card pick because it's going in a very, very different direction. It's certainly nowhere near the level of quality that you have suggested, because I really want to see Phil DeFries and Nemkov now.
It's be fun as hell.
It'd be so good. And again, more people just need to know about DeFries, who hasn't lost a heavyweight fight in like 6 years or something. Like, the guy is, he's got a nice run out there. And hey, I'll be the first one to say I probably couldn't name half of the people he's beaten during his heavyweight title run. But you know what? My memory's shot anyway. That applies to actually a lot of promotions. So that's really not a Phil DeFries and KSW problem. That's probably a me problem and just a MMA saturation problem at this point. But
you
also
most of them. Like, even if maybe you can't recall off the top of your head, like, you know most of the names.
Sure. Yeah. If you showed me, I'd be like, oh yeah, I know this guy. Todd Duffy. Todd Duffy's in there. That was a good
Luis
one.
Henry,
that was a good one.
Thomas Narkoon.
Yeah.
Darko Stazic, who picked up a big win at KSW this weekend, like a violent knockout.
Man, DeFries and Nemkov just feels right. Let's go.
Sick fight. I was really proud of myself when you're done
gaslighting John Jones. Can you gaslight PFL Tour a little bit here and kind of make this? I don't want to distract you from your mission because I feel like you're doing the God's work there. But
well, PFL's already taken over the gaslight John Jones, movement for
this
me.
This is
apparently
true. They've helped you. Yeah. They have helped you.
So now I can focus on gaslighting them.
Jed, for my wildcard pick, I don't know if you know about this. I rarely mention it in our Slack channels. There's a fighter named Daniel Lacerda. Have you heard of him? I'm a fan.
Record-breaking Daniel Lacerda?
I do tend to talk of fighters who are nowhere near top 50 maybe in their division who will never ever fight for a UFC title. I have talked about this man an inordinate amount.
He may never ever fight in the UFC again.
I don't know that at this point. I assure you, everything I say about Daniel Lacerda is out of respect. I described his UFC run when I was writing up his unfortunate loss to Edgar Cairns as strange. There's a lot of other words you could use to describe his UFC run. I went with strange. I chose to be kind and use strange. 0-5. One no contest, two weight misses, one of which was well over the limit and ended in a fight being canceled. I mean, technically, the Kairos fight also might have been weight cut related. It was a medical issue. It was after they made weight. So, your mileage may vary there if you want to call that a medical
update. But wasn't it, medical didn't issue. They make like 130? Wasn't it like
it
a catch weight?
They made weight. They made weight.
Yeah, and it was catch weight. It feels unlikely that was medical for that, but maybe.
Nothing with Daniel Lacerda feels unlikely. You know what felt true. Unlikely? Him going 0-4 and getting finished in his first four UFC fights and then getting this Kairos, that UFC saying, no, we will book this Kairos fight again. Don't worry about it. We're going to make this happen. But yes, I believe he passes Pat Healy as the only fighter. Though Pat Healy did technically get a win. It was just overturned for, I think, he was smoking the weeds. I can't remember. So he is the only fighter, as far as I know. 0-5 in the UFC, all finishes, and a no contest, which technically he was finished in at first. It's just a botched referee call. Dan Sander, you're a legend. And Jed, you said he's probably out of the UFC. I don't know. If he gets one more shot, we got to put him in there with Shannon Ross, right? I mean, Shannon Ross is
the boss.
I had people come. Shannon Ross, the boss, the Turkish delight. I had a lot of people saying, like, hey, you know, Lacerda's run was pretty rough, but how about Shannon Ross getting smoked on the Contender Series and then getting, I think he stepped in on short notice. I want to say that's why he got signed to fight Clayton Rodriguez. 59-second knockout loss to Clayton Rodriguez, 17-second knockout loss to Jesus Aguilar, and then a brutal second-round knockout loss to Hyun Sung Park. If he's still on the UFC roster come Tuesday, and so is Daniel Lacerda, let's do it. Because I think someone has to win. Now, that has a lot of 100 other weird things to happen. Someone's always got to go. And I, again, if people think I'm making fun of both guys, I mean, I am a little bit tongue-in-cheek. But I have respect for anyone, of course, who steps in there. And it'd be just be interesting. It'd be fun to see one of these guys get a real shot at a victory. And who knows? Maybe turn their entire career around. I don't know. So Lacerda, Shannon Ross, that's where I'm going. I was trying to figure out who's the flyweight, like Jay Ellis. Who could we get in there with?
Just get Jay.
Lacerda.
Just get him his opportunity, you know?
Finally. Well, listen, we're saving Jay for Tony Ferguson, all right? So, all right.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with The Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
We don't have a lot of time here, so I'm going to run through some listener picks real quickly. Jed, if you have any thoughts, I will throw to you. First off, I got a wave of finger at people. A lot of people were saying, anyone who mentioned potentially another Pantoja Royval fight. A lot of people said Pantoja Royval 2. People, it is a trilogy. This isn't a Brandon Moreno situation where the first fight happened on the Ultimate Fighter. They fought 2 times officially in the UFC now. The first time
2 times in the last like 4 years. 3 years.
I guess people only, so I guess they're just discounting the first fight. I feel like this never happened to Frankie Edgar and Gray Maynard. Frankie Edgar and Gray Maynard, they always called that a trilogy fight, even though, again, the first fight was mostly forgettable, a win for Gray, and happened way before their first title fight. People always got it right.
The first one was August 2021. It is not even 3 years ago.
There's too many fights now. There's too many fights, but I'm still wagging my finger at people. Come on, you got it. The whole narrative with Pantoja and Royval is Pantoja, like you said, doing the, hey, I'm 5-0 against, 3-0 against Moreno, 2-0 against Pantoja. Like, I got to fight one of these guys again. What are we doing? And it's a great gimmick to have. So let's see. I'll read one. Four Corner Sports says Brian Ortega versus Ilya. You know, again, that seems possible, seems likely. Fernando Prado. It's Francisco Prado. Four Corner Sports. What is going on, buddy? He was also one of the people to say Pantoja Royval too. I got to move on. I got to move on. I don't know what's going on here. I'm reading any Daniel Lacerda picks, by the way. I don't see.
I hope somebody
picks. I don't see too many.
I hope someone match made for the fight in the crowd, because I'm watching videos of it right
boy.
Now.
And yeah.
There's some Dana electric efforts going on in there.
You guys can read about that at MMAFighting.com right now. Dana White's comments, actually. Pierre Rice, some great picks here. Naimov, Pierce, Felipe Dos Santos, Maxim, Ronaldo Rodriguez, Jimmy Flick, Ziam Moises, Kyres, Josh Van.
Ooh, Ziam Moises, I kind of like that one.
Yeah, it's nice.
It's a bit Aguilar, step back from Moises, but I like it.
Aguilar, Alan Nascimento. I like this a lot. Jaime Barcelos and Chris Gutierrez, 2.
Ooh.
Yeah, that's reaching down deep. We need more lower card rematches. We get a ton of top, like you said, top 5. Once people reach the top 5, it's like, oh, they can only fight people in the top 5, top 10. But when you're outside of that and you've still been and you've been around the UFC for a while, there's some fun rematches to be had, and they should definitely consider.
More importantly, we need more Jaime Barcelos. He is lovely. He almost was so the wild card for me in the UFC. It was like, who do I get him? But then there was nothing that jumped out where I was like, yes, I need to see this, but I love Jaime Barcelos. Super fun.
Jed, what do you think of Haraghi Molly McCann?
That's pretty good. It's pretty, pretty good. I'm just not sure. I don't know what the UFC's sort of plans are with Molly McCann. I mean, obviously she makes the drop down, looked sensational in her. Is that her true strawweight debut or just her UFC strawweight debut?
I believe it's true. I don't think she had, if I'm not mistaken, she had never fought.
I think so. I don't know if they're going to try and, that's the thing. I was very intentional about not giving Haraghi a top 15 fighter, not giving her, you know, the Michelle Waterson Gomez, something like that, because I don't think she's young and I don't think she has the name to sort of demand that. I think Molly McCann will almost certainly be getting Angela Hill, Michelle Waterston Gomez. I think one of those two will be for Molly McCann, because that's, you know, that's a known entity, and Molly McCann is still an extremely popular fighter, and she looks so good. Let's get her into the strawweight rankings. But I forgot. The fight itself is fun.
She could get the carry. That's right. McCann could get the Carolina or the Waterston Gomez fight. That's right.
Oh yeah. Or like in any of those three, I would be very shocked if Molly McCann is not fighting one of those three.
Scott McCrae coming in with that PFL energy. Jeb, what do you think? McKee and Pico at 155?
I mean, I would watch it. And it, honestly, maybe that happens because I know they're probably still interested in doing Pitbull versus Pinedo for featherweight. And Lord knows what their lightweight divisions are doing. I mean, OAM left. Usman, I think, is still the Bellator champion, but he had the issue with the drug test. So it'd be a funnest fight. Like, no one's going to be upset about that fight. Because, dude, there's a very real world where that's just like two of the top 40 pound for pound fighters on the planet.
TAC MMA, by the way, they said they're upset with me because I didn't read their picks during a live show. We don't read picks. Guys, we don't go to the listener picks a lot when we're doing our live post-pay-per-view shows.
Unless you want to super chat it.
Unless you want to super chat it, the
picks will be read.
And hop on. Our love and attention can be bought. You guys
have to. We are mercenaries.
But guess what? I am not impressed with your performance, TAC MMA, because here's one pick I like: Moreno versus Nicolau. I like that pick.
Good pick.
What I don't like is you saying Yair Rodriguez versus Josh Emmett with no two next to it, and two, that happened recently enough and was such a definitive win for Yair. I don't think they're going to run that back. I don't see why Yair would take that fight. That was literally his most recent win. UFC 284 February of last year.
Pantoja to fight Brandon Royval.
That fight doesn't count. Hey, listen, if Josh Emmett had scored some. Oh, he killed. Bryce Mitchell.
With this. He picked Bryce Mitchell up a body murking in the meantime.
Yes, but you know what? But they're not desperate to book him. Again, Royval Pantoja 3 is an act of desperation. I'm framing it that way, and I have no problem framing it that way. But Rodriguez versus Emmett, didn't even mention the two. TAC MMA.
That was for this one. Yeah, was for the first one. He won an interim title.
Come on, TAC. Save your anger for yourself. Quickly to Instagram. Nick Linville. Shout out to our boy Nick Linville in med school, who apparently may have correctly diagnosed Eric Silva's injury on the spot. He messaged me after it happened. He said, looks like an MCL injury. Sure enough, during the next fight, the commentary said that may it be an MCL injury. So, Nick Linville, well done. Gerard Biaga, guys, I just want to read only fresh stuff. Moreno versus Manel Kopp. Okay.
I don't hate it.
I don't hate it. Yair versus Arnold Allen. That's a pretty popular pick. Let's keep going here. Left Lane. What's up, Left Lane? Royval Kopp. There you go. Jed. Yair and Giga. Okay. Ortega or Evloev. Is this you? Is this person you? Torres versus Klein. That's money. We're all on that. Kyrez versus Jimmy Flick. Sure. And then got a couple of emails here. Sorry, guys. Got to run through this quickly. We just don't have a ton of time today. Tristan Gordet. What's up, Tristan? Regular contributor. Tristan. Moreno Royval. Harney Barcelos, Montel Jackson, Haudegui and Loma, my guy. Yair Arnold Allen and Casey Carpenter. Oh, he has a comment for you. Wait, how did he know?
I may have mentioned it on the post show.
Okay. You did mention it. That's right. What's this? Raw Dog versus Cop. Mine and Mike. Oh, mine and Mike's fight. We got Justin versus Max. So why not? Sure. Barbosa.
What's the comment
we'll never
for
get
me?
You and I don't. Hold on, Casey. This picks are a little confusing. Manuel Torres, Jamie Malarkey, Yasmin versus Dern. Too soon.
Yasmin gets run over. I mean, that'd be a good get back for Dern, I guess.
I guess, yeah. Okay, Jet, I agree with Mike. Peach World sucks, and a Texan Peach World is supposed to mean Georgia?
Yes, I believe that. We are the Peach State.
Okay. Sorry, it's a derogatory term. I should not have called it that. Peach World sucks. I don't know why I repeated it. And a Texan who lives in Savannah, my girlfriend let me go there. Yeah, it sucks more than Chandler. I am sure being from Savannah knows that. Casey sounds a little intoxicated here with some of this. But
also,
I don't know. Shots fired at Georgia, I guess.
I guess. Is literally the only human being I've ever met who is not in love with Savannah. Unless you grew up there and then it's like, oh, it's my hometown. So I'm not. But like, everyone who's ever been is like, oh my God, this is the most gorgeous place of all time, because it is an extremely pretty location. So, but good on you, Casey. Hope I'm sorry your girlfriend lives in Savannah. I think that's what I'm taking from this.
I don't know. I was confused. Savannah, that's where they filmed the Forrest Gump bench, right? Am I crazy? The Forrest Gump.
It's absolutely it. They've filmed a lot of stuff there, and increasingly more as Georgia has become a hub for the filmmaking industry. There's just a ton of studios and stuff in Atlanta, and then Savannah's on the coast, so there gets to be a lot more stuff. And also, again, it's an astonishingly pretty city. Like, it is very pretty.
I went there with my parents many, 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 many years ago when I was a young lad, and my mother, she still to this day talks about Savannah. She loves Savannah. Yeah. She's like, I want to go back to Savannah. That's how I got there.
My dad was stationed in the Army nearby, went there, was like, this is great, got out, and my mom and dad moved to Savannah.
There you go. Because of Savannah, we have Jed Meshew. Is that fair to say, or is that not 100%?
I mean, let's say fair. It's fair to say.
All right, guys. You guys know where to send your picks for next week's UFC Vegas 88.
Maybe don't even send them in. We're going to be overrun with picks next week, I'm certain.
We are.
There's going to be too much happening.
A titanic headliner between Jairzinho Rozenstruik and Shamil Gaziev. Undefeated Shamil Gaziev. You'll put some respect on his name. Vitor Petrino, Tyson Pedro in the co-main event. Vitor Petrino also undefeated. So there you go. We got a couple O's that could go. There's intrigue there.
As bad as this card is, it's actually not bad. It's just that the headliner hurts everyone's soul. But Alex Perez Muhammad Makhachev is two like top 10 ranked flyweights.
That could be the main events. We've got Alex Perez and Muhammad. Yeah, another undefeated.
There are four ranked flyweights fighting on this card. Umar Nurmagomedov, who I think all of us think is a future bantamweight champion, is fighting on this card. Probably, honestly, for stakes, because if Umar wins that, seems like he might get Corey Sandhagen if he goes out there and gets another one. I mean, there are at least seven ranked fighters, eight maybe. I don't know if Tyson Pedro is ranked in the UFC or not. I mean,
And we got a lot of undefeateds, like you said. Listen, sick. Eric Anders, Jamie Pickett, neither man undefeated, but, you know, always game. Alex Perez, Makhachev, of course, Makhachev undefeated. Matt Schnell, Steve Ursek. Ursek undefeated in the UFC so far. Umar and Bezat Almakhan. Umar, 60-0 his career, who I think might be the best bantamweight in the world. And then also on the prelims, Vinicius Oliveira, Yanis Gamori, Javid Basharat, another undefeated, Ayman Zahabi, Loic Radzibov, Abdul Karim Al-Salwadi. I should have remembered that, guys. I interviewed him, I think. And Christian Leroy Duncan, Claudio Ribeiro. So a lot of opportunities for fun here.
Also, one, we're getting Raul Rosas, Ricky Tercios, because that fight didn't end up happening.
Oh, it got bumped back
a week.
Thank you.
And I did just realize, that's whoever put up Ludovic Klein as a possible for Manuel Torres, that's doo-doo, because Klein is fighting Joel Alvarez next weekend.
Stop it. No, that fight has been canceled.
Oh, that fight was canceled?
I believe, yes, because I had checked. Okay. Because I put that fight out there, and I certainly don't want to be spreading doo-doo on the show, which I have before. I believe that fight is canceled.
That's a shame, because I will always watch Alvarez fight.
I'd love to see that fight, but unfortunately will not be happening next week. Yes, we've got a card.
Alvarez is now fighting Mateusz Rebecki like a month later or some shit.
That's another good fight.
Lightweight rocks, man.
That is straight up insane. I know. Rocks. I am a bantamweight is the best division advocate, but lightweight is just insane. And it's a reason.
No bad matchups.
Mike, you're I'm just going to call you Mike till the show's over. Jed, this is why, and your favorite word, lightweight, is considered the consensus best division in MMA. Consensus. Enough people said it. It's a consensus. Thank you, Jed. Thank you, Jed, not Mike. My best friend, shout out to my best friend. He will be back next week. Thank you for helping me recap this card and make some great fight picks, not just for UFC Mexico City, but also for PFL versus Bellator champs. This is Alexander K. Lee. This has been, again, Jed Meshew. For on to the next one, people. And remember, MMA is supposed to be fun. Join us next week on to the next one.
Phil DeFreeze versus Vadim Nemkov.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
Hey, this is Scott Galloway, author, professor, entrepreneur, and most importantly, host of the Prop G podcast. We got a special series running on right now called The Future of Work, where I answer all your questions on, surprise, the future of work. Questions including, what are we missing when we work remotely? Or how do we handle work-life balance when a major opportunity comes knocking? From the provocative to the technical, we're offering insights you won't want to miss. So tune in to The Future of Work, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Canva. You can find it on the Prop G Pod wherever you get your podcasts.